Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
And welcome to another Friday night edition of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host, and I'm so glad to be with y'all this evening. Listen, it's been a very stressful day, but I am here and ready and chomping at the bit to get on Hot Topics tonight. We've had a very interesting week in the news, and so we're going to try to get it all in, but I'm not sure if we're going to be successful, but we're going to be trying as hard as we can to make it happen. Tonight we're going to talk about several things. All right, we're going to do another Hot Topic segment because we've been watching the numbers, and for some reason you guys seem to be gravitating toward when we talk about Hot Topics, which, you know, is when we talk about multiple subjects, what's going on in the news, because really we realize that talking about just one topic for 2 hours, you know, we can do that, but we miss so much of the news, and so we just decided that we would start covering more topics. And of course, because there's more topics to cover, there's more news going on. So tonight, first of all, we're going to start off with the Elliot Rogers killing spree, if you want to call it that, or killing rampage. The young man out of California who basically, it appears, lost it. But before he lost it, totally, he took to YouTube and posted a video and basically told why he was doing what he was doing. And in my opinion, I don't find it a satisfactory reason to kill anybody. I think if you're that dissatisfied with life, maybe you ought to find your own exit and not take anybody else out with you. But that's just my opinion. But on board tonight is Christopher Buns, who finally settled down and is going to be back on a regular basis and not bouncing all around. Good evening, Christopher. How you doing?
Great, Carrie. How are you doing?
Good. We love you and we missed you.
Love you and miss you equally as well. Missed everybody as well. Thank you so much. And, yes, I'm back.
Oh, great. AJ Houston, good evening.
Hey, what's up, Carrie? How y'all doing, man? What's up, Chris?
Hey, how you doing, AJ, brother?
I'm doing good,
you know,
man.
What?
Ready for the topics.
Oh, Lynn, let's get it. You know, tonight I want to, if you guys want to start off with the tape, it's only about 6 minutes and 57 seconds on YouTube where he basically explained why he felt a need to do what he was going to do. Do you all want to hear the tape now, or do you want to talk a little bit about him and then go into the tape?
No, tape first.
We're gonna go to the tape, and basically the tape is on YouTube, and it's under what's called Elliot Rogers Retribution, and then it says in parentheses alleged killer video threat. And so, like I said, it's 6 minutes 57 seconds in which Mr. Elliot Rogers is speaking in his own words about why he's about to do what he's going to do. Okay, y'all, let's see if I can set it up for you. But before I do, there's a lot of talk, you know, about Mr. Rogers' ethnicity. For some reason, we're calling him Caucasian, but I'm understanding he's not just Caucasian, he's Caucasian and Asian. So his mother is, like, Chinese Malaysian. So he referred to himself as Eurasian. I'm sorry, Eurasian or something. So, you know, it is what it is. Okay, let me see if I can cue him up. So basically they're saying the following content has been identified as potentially offensive and graphic. So for anybody who may be offended, I ask you to leave the room now. But I didn't find it as offensive as I did find it making me enraged by, you know, someone's sense of entitlement. But, you know, here we go. Let's see if we can set him up. Here we go.
Well, this is my last video.
Oh, my God. We can't hear it.
It all has to come to this.
Okay. We're going to have to do something else, y'all. He's so low talking, you're not going to be able to hear it. We're going to have to do something else. It's too low. I apologize. I did not check it before. He is talking so low, you absolutely cannot hear. I am not going to be able to get that volume up any higher. Okay, well, let me just kind of explain to you what he says in the video. And you all can go to it at a later time and view the video for yourself. He's sitting in this car, very nice BMW, and he's basically on a schoolboy rant about how he feels like, you know, he's not accepted and how he feels that girls don't like him. And so basically, you know, everybody's got to be crazy because they don't see in him what he thinks they should see in him, in essence. And so, in my opinion, it was the equivalent of a spoiled, rotten brat who had a sense of entitlement, who took it out on the world that things did not turn out like he wanted to. And I'll start off tonight by saying, in my opinion, rejection is something we've all felt. It's a part of growing up. It's a part of life. And if you keep living, you'll be rejected again. So, I think what I sense is this young man felt like he can't be rejected by anybody. He didn't have the maturity to realize that if he kept living, that eventually he would find someone who would, I guess, be into him like he was feeling like he needed to have that if he just kept living. So that's what I found in listening to that video. Did y'all see that as well? Did y'all sense what I sensed?
Well, I think the whole concept is that privilege, when you grow up privileged, you have a tendency, you don't have the wherewithal to withstand anything. You have to give up quick.
Yeah. I agree. Christopher, what do you think?
I saw the video once or twice, and yeah, there's definite overtone of innate entitlement, almost like from the time he was born. And if you listen to him, you can hear a lot of delusional and there's some psychotic overtone. And the reason I say that is that he referred to what he was not getting from other individuals or what he felt that he should be getting. And when you listen to him, it's troubling and it's scary pretty much at any given point where he was basically a powder keg. And then in terms of what he was talking about, he basically was saying that because I'm not getting what I feel I should get or what people should basically be giving to me, I'm going to make individuals pay. And he wasn't, and you could just tell, it wasn't, oh, I'm just going to pull a prank or pull a trick. He was talking about basically harming people, killing people because of that. And I think that, like, kind of like what AJ was saying, when you listen to this and anybody that is speaking in these terms, I think at that point he was plotting out what he was going to do. And I think the delusions of grandeur became so much in the entitlement that he pretty much was going to carry out something at that point.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And basically, Radar, what's this? Radar Online is reporting that he was on Xanax just days leading up to this, until what happened. So can you tell us, Christopher or AJ, maybe if y'all know, what does Xanax do? What kind of effect does Xanax have on the body?
Well, it's supposed to battle depression. But Xanax also gives you a sleep disorder and a whole, if you don't read the side effects, when you read the side effects, you'd rather have whatever you have than to take Xanax.
True that.
No,
true.
That's the truth. But see, my thing about the whole thing is that at some point in time, he had declared that he was going to take it out on any, he didn't want to take it out on the people that he thought was, that bothered him, that made him feel this way. He's going to take it out on anywhere, any place, any people that was in the area when he decided to take it out. And I think that's the fault. The fault is that you think you're privileged enough to make other people say that I did this because. And I don't think there's a because worthy of you doing anything like that. If you want to go that bad, take yourself out and just say that you did some other people.
Let me back up for a second. I swear, y'all, this has been one of the longest days of my life. So excuse me for being just a little all over the page tonight. But I was going to start off with the tape, and the tape not working right kind of threw me off a little bit. But let me get back on point. Basically, this attack happened May 23rd, and basically Mr. Elliot Rogers, he attacked people at random. I mean, you all are saying at random. I just wonder, was some of it random and some of it wasn't? But he attacked several people, and he left six UC Santa Barbara students dead, and 13 other people were injured. So he left six UC Santa Barbara students dead and 13 other people injured. That's a whole lot of people. That's a whole lot of people. And so before he did it, though, way back on April 30th, someone notified a mental health agency about what was going on. They have not disclosed the details of what that conversation was about. But after the agency contacted his mother and got a better understanding, then they contacted authorities. And so at that point, on April 30th, the police went out to see him. Now, this is the crazy part. On April 30th, four deputies, a UC Santa Barbara police officer, and a dispatcher in training all went to this man's place, his apartment, and talked with him. And with all of those people who are, professionals, or one was in training, but everybody else should have been a professional, nobody detected that he was in trouble. And so they're saying they were aware of the videos, but they didn't view them. So what did they miss? How do y'all think that they went there and did not catch there was a problem?
But, Kelly, when you're privileged, it's just like a child in the store saying, F you, mama, I'm going to get what I want. And she'll just get what he wants. But that don't mean that he means it. It just means that his parents comply with it. So the thing that happens is that you see people all the time, they're so used to saying whatever they want to say at that instant, which is an attitudinal thing, which don't mean that they really mean it. So when you're privileged and they're used to seeing you, used to come out to your house because you ran over a dog, or you ran through somebody's yard and killed their flowers, or something just normal, you say, well, don't do that no more. Okay, I won't do it no more. Because you can always have the right answers to the wrong questions, which doesn't mean that you're right. It just means that you're in compliance with whatever anybody is thinking about you.
Well, I'll phrase the question a different way then, I guess. If somebody says, I think somebody's going to lose it, and I'm just assuming it was something to this effect because his mother was aware of the videos online. So if somebody is telling the deputies that they feel like this guy is a powder keg, what kind of welfare check are you going to without looking at them and realizing that you may be talking to a crazy person, so therefore you need to make sure that you check and double check? Just kind of like, I'm sure everybody's taken a psychological test before. I've had to on several jobs. And what they'll do is they'll ask you, do you like flowers, at the beginning of the test? And then they'll ask you in the middle of the test, would you like to be a florist? And then at the end of the test, they'll say, well, do you like to have flowers in your garden? Well, they're looking at you for consistency, because they feel like if you like flowers at the beginning, you ought to like flowers in the middle, and you ought to like flowers at the end. So same principle should have applied when they went to talk to this young man. Not that he was cordial and knew what to say. I mean, he's a college student. So I don't know how they couldn't have asked him the right questions if you're going based on the fact that there may be some mental issues going on and he may be a powder keg. I don't know. What do you think, Chris?
Before Chris says, and I think everybody goes historical data.
Okay.
The historical data, you see that he's done a lot of things that other privileged children do, and he's okay. Never been outside the realm of, the realm of expectation. So, they go in and they look at the parents and they say, this is a well-kept house. These people are privileged. They have money. He has a BMW. He does what he's supposed to do. He's in college. So he's made it through the 12 years of school without doing anything. So we just think he's acting up. And that would be that's why all these things happen, because people don't understand that there's a breaking point. The straw that broke the camel's back is not just the same. That's an actual thing, because somebody had to see that at some point in time, no matter how many straws you put on a camel's back, one more straw will break his back. But you don't know which straw that is. So how can you declare this person is going to do what he do when you don't know which straw is the one that broke his back?
I hear you. I hear you. Christopher?
Well, AJ, at some point, as usual, it can be very difficult. Sometimes you don't always get the telltale sign. And I know a lot is going to come out about he was on Xanax or whatever medication, and, you know, he was on medication because of it was on an antidepressant and anti-anxiety and other things that were going on. But I do think it was, it sounds like from what I've read and what I've heard, that this was something that was progressive in nature. But I do think that he had the telltale signs of psychosis probably early on that probably wasn't fully maybe diagnosed, and some of it may have just laid dormant until certain things built up, the rejection, the this and that. Maybe he was going out with someone and they made fun of him. It could have been a lot of things. But the other thing, too, in terms of the police, and back to your question, in a lot of cases, they're starting to, but most police departments don't really have any true formal training to identify mental health and mental or behavioral health issues. Some do, but the large majority don't, and that's why in a lot of the case police come to, they end up probably using excessive force or killing that individual because they think the individual is, quote-unquote, on illicit drugs, they're doing LSD and so forth, and a lot of times it's delusional or a psychotic episode. But in this case, the police were armed with some historical information and data. And I know in the military, if a soldier's talking kind of really all off the wall and doing things, we can do what's called a command directive, fitness for duty. We can call the police and we can tell the police we believe that individual is a threat based on how they're acting. And the police can take them into custody and escort them to a behavioral health for behavioral health evaluation. I think in this case, they forewent that because of his affluency and a nice car, and they didn't think. But sometimes it's not that you have to intervene because a person's actions, they've physically done something, but sometimes just because of their peculiar behavior. And I think in this case, it was it's clear to say because he was considered affluent, white, we really don't want to have to do anything here, that they didn't. Because I can tell you, had that been in a different area, had it been a different shade of an individual, they probably would have done more. And I think if we look at statistics, when they would go to what's considered an incident or an individual that was acting peculiar, maybe having some behavioral issues, they probably would tend to do more.
But Chris, talk to the fact that even in this instance, the police department looks at how many lawsuits they've had against them for false arrests or for arresting the wrong person. So there's a whole lot of apprehension in them following through with what they believe need to be deemed necessary. Because a lot of times they say, this has happened before and we were wrong. So a lot of times there's an apprehension in there.
Well, and you're absolutely right about that. But then that's also with the – and sometimes they utilize their police departments, their budget constraints. But it is an alarming number of individuals that after the fact they're finding out that they had mental health issues. And just didn't have the right training. And I'm not saying that the training is the end-all, be-all, and you're going to be able to identify if someone has an adjustment disorder, if they're psychotic in nature or they're doing this or that. But it would help, and then it would also – maybe give police officers a better vantage point for the types of things they should be trying to observe. So if you're going to someone's place, it's not just observing them, observing their place. I mean, do you see 10 weapons over there that they don't have credentials to have? I mean, all these type of things need to be going on in evaluating the person, the surrounding, how are they acting, what are they saying, those type of things. And I think by and large, they are skeptical and they don't. But their apprehension is probably to be less inclined to arrest someone or detain someone who is affluent versus someone who is not.
Well, let me ask you all this. First of all, if it was just something minor, didn't they take an awful lot of people to the apartment? I mean, what did I say? I said four deputies, a UC Santa Barbara police officer, and a dispatcher in training. If I saw all those people show up, I'd be thinking, well, what did I do? I mean, if I was innocent. So, I mean, my point is, doesn't that sound like maybe they thought something serious was going on for that many people to go to the scene?
Well, a lot of times people in training, you know, you take people to say, okay, I have this situation you've never seen before as an officer. So let me show you how the elder officer in this situation deals with it. So you take these people and you have this other person in training. You come and you talk to the people and you walk through the process that your book allows you to. See, there's restraint written in the process that they can actually do without arresting somebody and without being liable for some type of lawsuit.
Okay, Christopher,
That's true, but if you go into a given situation and you have emails or you have Facebook or you have videos or other posts, let's say, for instance, post what they called a comical post about wanting to harm the president. Well, it may be joking to you, but if they show up at your door, I can guarantee you that they're going to do more than just talk to you. You're probably going to be detained or interrogated on the spot, if not taken down to the precinct and questioned some more, and or the FBI being called in. Now, that's a little extreme. But in this case, I think there was I know me going into a situation where I was equipped, where I had heard some things and knew for a fact that an individual was basically saying some things, uttering some things. Honestly, in that case, I would be concerned about liability, but I would want to probe a little bit more. And, yeah, they asked them a few questions, but I think I would have had to have some medical psych person there to also ask them some questions. And then if they refuse, there are other tiers and measures that you can still do without having to basically bring that person into custody. But to me, in this case, I think because of public safety and because of what the person had posted, and it seemed to be more true than not true, that maybe would have been a case where the liability would have been worth the risk of taking the person in custody versus just asking them some questions and then leaving the residence.
But hindsight is always 20/20. Hindsight is always 20/20. And I understand what you're saying, but on the military base, see, when you are a GI, a government issue, you have other legal obligations to restrain and to hold somebody. But when you're a civilian and you're privileged, there's some other things that you look at and you say, well, you know, we've been out here a couple of times and, you know, it's always the same thing. So a lot of times you don't take it serious. Just as the NFL player for the San Francisco 49ers that was talking about a bomb threat at the airport. See, he's going to do some time. You know, but the thing is when you are in a different situation, people treat it differently. But when you're in, you know, just imagine the township and how many people are there and how many times they went to that particular place and that particular residence and how many times they went over there and said, well, this boy is giving his parents problems. He's just doing that for his parents, because a lot of times people will cry wolf for their parents just to get attention.
Let me jump in with this then, because you guys have kids and I don't. You know each of your children. Don't you know when one of them ain't so right in the head?
Yeah, I do.
I mean,
but that means that you spend time with your children and not money.
Is it true? And his father, by the way, is one of the directors.
Money on his child, saying he got everything he needs, or I'm spending time with him to see what he needs. There's a difference.
Now, his father was one of the directors on Hunger Games. Now, I didn't see the movie Hunger Games, but I went to Wikipedia to see what Hunger Games was all about. Did either of you all see the movie?
I saw the first, and I didn't see the second one.
Okay, so I think they're talking about the first. What was Hunger Games all about?
Hunting people.
What it was is that you had a privileged few, and you had all these different counties. Let's say it's a county. But every county had to send a person to represent them for them to get the privilege of the next year's rations and food. So Hunger Games was about each individual from these counties actually battling and trying to survive so they could win privilege for their county or their area for the next year.
But it's also, you're right, but it's secondarily also about money and people betting on it, because there were people, as they were doing this, that were basically the ones who selected these select individuals to battle, whether they were running through the forest and trying to track down and kill the other one and yet stay alive. But then there were also people that benefited from it beyond the food, that were basically higher up in the food chain, so to speak.
Okay, so doesn't it seem funny that his child would do something like that? I mean, isn't that ironic?
Well,
I don't know.
Well, yeah, in a sense, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, yes, it's ironic. But the thing is that with psychosis has its own reality. And he has become, in his mindset, justified in the way that he felt of what he was not getting. People were not exhibiting towards him in terms of compassion, being able to have sex, hang out, this and that, and so forth. But you have to look at it this way, too, because, I mean, we all have, in a sense, our own reality, but usually it's logical, it's within norms and confines. But a person who is both psychotic and delusional and has adjustment disorder, even when they're getting what they want, is still not their best reality, if that makes sense. So I've seen people that say, well, I'm this and this is not, and then they get that, but they still are psychotic. Just because you want does not mean that you won't do these violent things.
In my opinion, the young man put way too much value on sex. Serious. I mean, I think anytime you think killing somebody is the right thing to do because they didn't give you sex is crazy. I mean,
but
he
wanted somebody to do that because of how he felt. He didn't say I got money. I can have sex with a prostitute or this or that. Not that I'm advocating that, but he wanted it on his terms, how he felt. Like, I guess the girl was supposed to beat his mind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And really, he sounds like a very insecure person. And people do not realize, for anybody who's listening who may not know this, if you are insecure, people can smell it on you. I mean, am I wrong, y'all? It's just a certain body language you have. It's a certain way in which you carry yourself that everybody wants to be around somebody who's confident. I mean,
Well, right, and when your self-esteem is based off of somebody else, that means you're not confident with yourself.
And say what, AJ? Okay, I don't know what happened when AJ's on. But you know,
I'm here.
Okay, so haven't you ever seen people who are insecure? And when you walk into a room, you can pick them out. You know, they're shy and they seem very closed and, you know, and you don't know how to approach them. And when you do talk to them, they don't seem to, like, follow the conversation. When I say follow the conversation, meaning they don't know how to jump in and just socialize with the group. They just kind of feel like, what?
No, I'm saying as many places as I've been, and as many people as I've hung out with, there are people that seem that way but know how to present themselves to seem like they're not the way that you perceive them at first. They've practiced it. There's a practice that they go through to say that I'm not that person, I just don't talk to everybody. I'm not that person, I'm just keep to myself. But there's always some way that they've taught themselves to camouflage themselves in an audience, in a group of people.
See, this is where I'm going to go with scripture on you. The Bible says, let the weak say I'm strong. So that means that so a man thinketh so, and another scripture, so a man thinketh so is he. So when you have confidence issues and low self-esteem, I think the first way out of it is to talk your way out of it, because the power of life and death is in the tongue. And so if you don't believe in yourself, nobody else is going to believe in you either. So therefore, you're giving off this energy that this person's a loser. You may be everything but your energy says, I'm less than. And so if people treat you that way, it may be just because they're picking up on what you're giving out.
But Terry, how many people in a relationship have fooled you for months?
Oh, been there, done that. Mm. A lot.
As I said, see, because we have this persona that we've learned in the process of living, that there's a way that we can be where people don't know who we are.
Mm-hmm.
So when you finally reveal who you are, people don't know who you be.
I can go there. But you know what? And I get that. There's a bunch of fake people out there. I get that. And what this young man, in my opinion, didn't do was he didn't find himself. He didn't value himself enough. If he valued himself enough, he wouldn't have put such a high price on sex. He would have put a higher price on getting himself prepared to have sex with the right person, realizing that sex wasn't the ultimate prize. You know, he looked at sex like it was a prize, and so because he didn't win the game, because it looked like everything was a game to him, then in some kind of way he's a sore loser, and he's going to walk away, he's going to walk off and go and get his guns and come back and kill everybody. That's crazy.
Well, but
that's
see,
crazy.
Mental illness, and it is crazy, and often individuals that have self-esteem, self-confidence, self-worth, or self-value issues, they tend to have areas of deficiencies in, when I'm going back to the psychosis piece, of their perceived reality, because a lot of times what they're dealing with is a chemical imbalance.
Ooh.
And whether it's certain portions of the brain or neuroreceptors that are lacking, usually that's what the medication is doing, because it modifies that, or it tries to, and that's why they have to titrate medication up and down to get the right balance so that it can somewhat affect the chemical imbalance. But some individuals go through, even and whether they're always compliant with their medication and the follow-up and the different types of therapy that sometimes go along with that, but it's the psychosis that creates that nature of risk-taking, of putting the emphasis on sex or putting the emphasis on drugs. And a lot of times people with psychosis like to deflect what they want onto other people because they're not confident enough. And it is a lot of what AJ was saying. A lot of times people who know they have a deficiency, they may not totally understand the whole picture, but they normally may know that they have that deficiency. So they know how to mimic or mask how they really are. And so most people would say, that person doesn't seem all the way right in the head, but they're all right. They're cool. You know, they're just a little bit quirky here or there, not fully realizing, no, they're more than just quirky. They have a significant behavioral health disorder, and in a lot of cases it's unmedicated, untreated, undiagnosed, and so these people go on. And then when they have these episodes, psychotic or the straw breaking the camel's back, and they have repeated episodes of that, it's usually only a matter of time that they're going to snap and break.
Mm. Oh, and, you know, and I can go there. I can go that the young man was a little off, or maybe a lot off. But the thing is, the funny thing about college is that's the time when you got to learn to fake it to make it. I mean, you know, everything is about getting in groups and figuring out who you are and learning and growing as a person. That said, if you know your child can't fit in to that group because what they got going on in their head, why would you send your kid off to college and have somebody roommate with him when you know he's got issues like that? I'm just saying. Parents got some responsibility in this. If you knew your kid had that kind of problem, if you're going to put him in the room with some kids, tell him he got issues. or you don't put them in the room with the other kids. They didn't deserve to lose their life. They didn't. I mean, I don't even care if somebody bullies you. I mean, I've been bullied before. I mean, let me be clear. It didn't last long, but I've been bullied before. We all been. I mean, it's always somebody bigger than you, somebody taller than you. That just happens. That's life. But I'm not a pushover, so, you know, it was a good try. But with him, you know, it was never any maturity or any growth in the way he saw things. It was one way. It was his way or no way. And his way or everybody had to go. And so, you know, I don't know. I just think his family has some responsibility in this, because if they knew he had issues, if they knew when they sent him to college, say what?
And I agree with you, and I think that probably as more come out, we'll find out to the degree that the parents knew. If he had a formal diagnosis, if he had been treated, I mean, more than what has just been said about, you know, the medication, the one medication that he was on. A lot of times, though, unfortunately, you would think probably great insurance, plenty of money, should have been no issue for access to care, mental health, behavior health. And I don't know, I can't speak for or necessarily against the parents, but what I can say is a lot of parents stand in denial, and sometimes they don't think, oh, well, this is my son, my daughter, Sally. Yes, she has some issues. She may be substance abuse, may drugs, may have some behavioral health issues. But, you know, it's really not that bad. When they've seen facets of it that really is bad, that they probably should have been more aggressive and more involved, then they don't. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, unfortunately, people just are, they have a lazy, fair attitude, and they will just pass it off, or they'll just be in denial, and they really won't do or at least maximize what they could do. And I think this may have been the type of situation, a perfect storm, where the parents may have been involved or may not have been as aggressive as they could have to at least let it be known that he may have these issues. But I think it goes back to, like, the videos and the posts, because with the one study, I can't remember the name of the study, but the one study they did that when they talked about young boys and girls, particularly males, and how if they, in their young childhood, if they have a propensity to be harmful to animals, to be very destructive and so forth, that's probably going to end up being a serial killer or someone that would end up being very violent. And it is proven true, I mean, because they're already starting off at that level, not having any consideration or less consideration for life. You know, they'll kill a cat, or, you know, they'll kick the dog every time they see the dog, and just do stuff like that that doesn't seem like a big deal, but it has a greater, I think it has a greater overtone than people want to pay attention to. But I think in this case, I'm not sure if the parents had ever saw any of the videos or any of the postings or saw anything that their son had written. But I do know, as the police, if you are equipped with more in a given case, I think it lends to investigate a little bit more than maybe they did in this case. And it should not matter just because of the affluent or non-affluent status, because if you want to look at it that way, most of the shootings, mass shootings, stabbings, individuals that have been harmed and so forth, I mean, if you just look at the picture or the profile of who that is, I mean, it should make sense that you might want to investigate a little bit more. And it doesn't tend to be basically, well, in this case, and I know in a lot of the other cases, it was predominantly white or considered Caucasian individuals or Asian or so forth, usually affluent or usually acting a certain way where they didn't think that they had to do anything else in terms of investigating or calling into question their behavior.
Well, I have to agree with you. A couple of other points I want to make about this, and, you know, we're going to move on in a minute, y'all, but it's just certain things about this story. I just got to say it. Because, you know, Center Stage is one of those shows where the other people may have gave you some of the facts, but we're going to give you all of the facts. Now, this is one thing I found out about Mr. Elliott. Elliott said that he envied cool kids, and he wanted to be one of them. Okay, let's start here. When I was in high school, in college, there was always a cool kid, but I was the type, I didn't join a sorority because I didn't need anybody to tell me what to do. Because I felt like I colored outside the line. I was smart enough that I didn't follow the leader. I was my own leader. And so I think this young man suffered greatly from, you know, self-esteem issues because in reality, I mean, cool, and I know sometimes when you're young, immaturity and all that is your biggest enemy, but I mean, just to say, you know, you envy the cool kids, I mean, that is just so lame. I mean, it's just so lame. I mean, because when you get through, there's always a cooler circle. You know, I mean, you have to be confident enough in yourself to say, you know what, when I arrive, that's when the party starts. You know, you can't be, well, you know, I got to the party and everybody was having a good time, so I didn't fit in. No, you create the party when you get there.
But Carrie, check this out. Okay, I understand exactly what you're saying, but imagine that somebody can be a bully, a cyber bully. Mm. How is that? So now you see the perception and the way people think is that I have to read the message that you sent, even though you sent another message before that. I can't delete it and not look at it. So now I'm upset because you're cyber bullying me. I told my sons, I say, if somebody sends you a message that you don't want to hear, delete that person. Just like you delete people on Facebook. I'm saying, so you go from cyberbullying to actually bullying, that's a whole different concept. But see, what you're saying is we have such weak-minded people because we haven't taught them how to be themselves. We haven't taught them to believe in themselves. So it's not a problem of this country. It's a problem of parents.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. I think, like I said, I think the parents have a large role in this. I really do. And another thing I wanted to bring up, y'all, and close your ears if you say Carrie's playing the race card again because here she goes. Listen, when you get through, Van Jones posted on Facebook, I think on Twitter. And if you don't know who Van Jones is, Google him. But anyway, Van Jones made a very good point. He said if it was a black shooter, they call him a thug. If it was a brown shooter, they call him a terrorist. But because he's a white shooter, they said that he was a good kid with mental issues. How unfair is that? It's just what it is.
Because you have to go back to Jeffrey Dahmer. That was the first instance that I heard America make an excuse for anybody. Because they say, when you look at his history, you know, he was brought up this way, and this is what happened, and all these other things. And I wrote a paper when I was at Kansas State that my science teacher didn't want to grade because we're supposed to do a study of DNA. You know, so my thing was the long-term effect of slavery, both mental and physical, a study of DNA. Because I'm saying that if they can use that as a reference at some point in time, what's embedded in my DNA has to be a reference to how I react, how I act to certain things. But it only applies to white people, and I hate to say this because I try to be so politically correct at everything I say, but this is the actual truth, that they will find excuses for anybody of a different color, and we are just culprits.
So let me ask you this. What's amazing on this one, are they easier on this kid than they were on the kid that shot up, or they say allegedly shot up, the elementary school? Sandy Hook? What was his name? Adam Lanza? Are they harder on this kid than they were on Adam Lanza? Or no, easier, I'm sorry, easier on this kid than they were on Adam Lanza. Adam Lanza was just a cuckoo. He was just crazy. He just did this and he just did that, and he went to the shooting range, and, you know, he was antisocial. And he was white, and, you know, he was in a nice area. But it just seems like a difference with this kid than with Adam Lanza. But I don't know. That's just my theory. But another another very important point I wanted to make about this whole thing. Now, in my opinion, it all goes back to taking our guns. Yeah, it really does. It's all about guns. So, you know, I'm just going to throw this out there. It may not stick. It just might. Just depends upon where you are in life. Was this a Manchurian candidate? I mean, it just seems, you know, he could fit the profile. You just got to do your homework and see, was this guy a Manchurian candidate? Because when you get through, let me ask you all, have you all considered this? All of the shootings seem to be taking place in safe zones, places I consider safe zones. When you shoot up a synagogue, a synagogue, that's a safe zone. When you shoot up a school, that's a safe zone. When you shoot up a movie theater, that's a safe zone. When you shoot on a military base, that's a safe zone. So these are typically places where you would feel that you would be safe and would not need to be guarded. Does anybody else connection
no,
there?
No, I understand what you're saying, but see, nobody was really talking about, everybody was talking about a conspiracy, but nobody was saying conspiracy theorists until President George Bush started saying it during 9/11. He said it so many times that everything we thought was wrong, we called a conspiracy theory. But there are conspiracies in the United States of this Americas. So the problem is that I'm not saying a Manchurian candidate, but I'm saying there's a possibility that there's so much money made in fear that sometimes fear is created for them to make money. I'm saying them, not just an anonymous them. I'm saying them as the people. You don't hear the NRA say anything when there's an instance like this. But right after it's over and everybody calm down, the NRA comes out talking about the gun laws and how everybody needs to bear arms and all this other stuff. But you have all these other people that are fighting for the gun laws that I wouldn't put it past them to make an instance happen to where they say, if anybody in the audience that got shot was armed, they could have stopped the person that was shooting.
Mm.
So there's always a defense matter, a defense approach in any offensive attack. Mm. So until we actually look at everything in total detail and see exactly who benefits from the occurrence or how many other policemen that jurisdiction is going to get, how much money they actually make and say, we need more security. So just like when we needed more oil, we invaded Iraq.
Mm.
You know, so there's all these things that we don't think correlate to anything, that we don't think match up. But there's always matches. There's a puzzle to this picture. Mm. We just haven't put it together yet.
Jordan Maxwell said there are no coincidences. Just for food for thought, y'all, there are no coincidences. Christopher, you didn't weigh in.
Wow. I mean, what you were saying in terms of like a Manchurian candidate, I mean, honestly, I can put nothing past industry, corporate industry, simply because money drives the wheel so much so, and some of what I know that has been done historically for certain gains, whether that's been with weapons to further the advance of a particular issue, there are individuals that will go to any lengths. And I think what people have to understand, let's say, for instance, if we look at weapons, what actually happens is that when weapons are sold to foreign countries, the military, by and large, is normally a part of that. But the military has very few military or government-owned facilities that make bullets, that make weapons, so forth and on and on. Those are privatized.
Okay.
So there may be someone who makes those for the government, but when they're sold, those companies are making money. So
I know a lot of times we're looking at the NRA and we're looking at the U.S. and carry and conceal and some of those things, which are important constitutional rights that people should be able to decide based on going through, you know, the doing what you have to do in terms of your particular city, in terms of if you choose to arm yourself and carry and conceal. But the reason that I was saying all of that is that there's so much money in weaponry that it's not even funny. And if you think that the folks who are making the money would not stoop to certain things to further the advances of weapons or however that's going to generate money and more influence for them, then I don't put that past things being staged or individuals being influenced or brainwashed to further the advance of things. I mean, they did that in medicine when they use, you know how the FDA, there's certain medications that they won't release because it has not yet been approved to be tested in humans, and now people can kind of sign waivers for certain medications that are test or trial drugs or experimental drugs.
Right.
But they used to do things where there were experimental drugs and they were experimenting on people without telling people.
Okay, what was Magic Johnson taking? I'm just throwing that out there. I'm going to go somewhere else with this. I'm not going there directly. I'm just saying that when you talk about constitutional rights, from the First Amendment is in dire straits, in dire need of help, because in America at the present day, you can't say anything about anything. You can't say your opinion about anything without somebody, some group, some entity, you know, deeming you the devil for saying this is my opinion on this particular matter.
True.
So we can't say constitutional rights when all of the rights in the Constitution aren't valid, aren't being defended. You know what I'm saying?
Well, see, this is the problem. All the shows that we've done lately are about somebody's agenda. It's a gay agenda. It's an abortion agenda. There's a gun agenda. I mean, they're out there. I mean, seriously. And if y'all ain't paying attention, you're going to get railroaded with them. I mean, it's just, it's obvious that there's an agenda in terms of them wanting to confiscate weapons. That's just obvious. Now, if you ain't paying attention, eventually they'll probably come get yours. But at the same time, you need to wake up, because all these shootings, when you get through, shootings are not the main cause of how people leave here. I mean, it's just not that many shootings. It's not enough shooting sprees or shooting rampages that go on for us to be that afraid. I'm sorry, people die in car accidents. People die of stabbings. People die of beatings every day. And I just don't know that I've seen enough shooting sprees or shooting rampages for me to say, okay, y'all, you know what? I just think we need to surrender these guns because it's just getting too tough out here. I don't see it like that yet. I
was actually studying, you know, I'm actually writing, you know, I'm on the Forward Slam team this year, and we're actually going to Nationals, so I was writing this piece based on what happened in Africa as far as missing girls, but looking at how many missing girls are in America. So when I start, you're looking up information, over 800,000 children go missing per year, 2,000 children a day in this United States. But that's not what we see on the news. So when you look at the numbers and you actually listen to what it is breathtaking.
Yeah.
It is heartbreaking that
and
all
it's
these
a lot
things
of our
that
children,
and nobody's saying anything. Wait, Karen, and the other thing is, like the Amber Alert, when the Amber Alert was made, there were so many missing Latoya's and Shaniqua's and all this other stuff before Amber Alert was actually made. So Amber Alert was made because what was happening in the black community finally caught up with the white.
Yeah. And we're just not paying attention. I mean, if we don't see some of this stuff. I mean, it's just, you know, it's very selective on who they consider a crisis situation. You know, when you get through, you know, it's horrific anytime someone kills someone, period, for no cause. You know, unless your life is being threatened or, you know, you feel like your life is going to be threatened, shooting somebody or stabbing someone is just wrong. But at the same time, I don't think that I've seen enough people stabbed or enough people shot that I say I want to give up my knives and guns. I mean, we just got to wake up with these all these agendas that people are putting off on us, and we're going, well, yeah, you know, they're right. But go do the numbers before you sign on to saying everybody ought to give up their gun. Tell you what, go give up your gun and leave mine alone, because I don't see it like that. Don't volunteer my knife because you feel like knives are killing too many people. I'm just not ready to start cutting my food with butter knives. And so I just think we need to be careful when we listen to somebody like Jamie Foxx, let's just say. A lot of times they're using actors now, you know, to push agendas. If Jamie Foxx comes out tomorrow and say, you know what, I think we all ought to give up our knives because 20 people got killed with a knife, that would be ridiculous to say, well, you know what, Jamie Foxx said it, so I tell you what, I think that's a good idea. No, Jamie Foxx is an actor. That's what Jamie Foxx does for a living. You know, it's a job. And so if you see him pushing an agenda on a commercial, he may just still be acting, and he may be getting a paycheck at the end of it. And so I think I see a lot of agendas today where actors or celebrities are being pushed out front. And I think I saw that with his gun bill, or with this push to take our guns recently, where Jamie Foxx and some other people had signed on saying, you know, I think it was after Sandy Hook, you know, we need to give up our guns. You know, guns are killing people. Well, Jamie, does your security team have any guns? I mean, we just really need to start thinking like that in terms of just because somebody said it and they're a celebrity, thinking it's okay is crazy. Would y'all agree with that?
Well, you know, as you were saying that, I was also thinking about some things related to Elliot Rodger and what would have actually happened. And I say this to kind of bring out the point that some of this is propaganda. I think some of it also is straightforward because there is an agenda, and there's an agenda that I believe if you put something out and you say certain things enough, you do get a lot of people that start to doubt or second guess, like for weapons. You know, yeah, you know, maybe I really should do this, maybe I really should do that. But if Elliot Rodgers had lived, I can guarantee you that they would have found a way not to give him the death sentence. Now, prison population of men.
Death penalty doesn't even apply in California. Charles Manson would already be dead, right?
Well, true, but I guess what I'm saying is just even if the state did have it in general, even when you find mentally ill minorities that commit violent crimes, they're probably 75% or more more likely when the same crime committed by their white counterpart to not get the same sentence. Because they will then get the luxury to fall under the guise of insane, insanity, mental illness. But even if the minority has the same, they don't get the same consideration. It's almost like you're going to go straight to death row, and it seems to be easier to give out the harsher sentence. Now, okay, people may say, well, what does this have to do with what Elliot Rodgers did? Well, a lot of things leading up to this, I think there was not an absolute of what could have been done or what the authorities could have done. But I do think that even though the military operates with a little bit more oversight and I think legal straightforwardness in terms of being able to do things when they see it, even after all this, I still don't hear a lot of talk about police that are first responders actually being able to be trained, to be able to observe and have more of an active role in these situations. A lot of times when they're shooting and doing these things, remember the video that we talked about and that you played the audio piece of the individual that was in the mountain, and then the police ended up, I believe, tasing him and then shooting him, and the man ended up having some behavioral health issues.
Yeah.
If you're not almost in the majority of the cases, lethal force is going to be used.
when it doesn't necessarily have to be. But then on the same hand, I can't too much blame the police, because if they don't have the training, they're going to revert back to the training they do have. Because they really...
Carrie,
that means a correction. There is a death penalty in California.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah. I have a friend that's going to call in. He actually sitting here listening to the show, so he had some couple of comments, so he's going to call in a minute. But yeah, I'm saying there's a lot of people on death row right now. But see, the problem is, just like you say, there's a disproportionate number. Just like in Texas, the amnesty program proved that there were so many blacks serving these long sentences for crimes they didn't commit that nobody wants to bring up all the crimes in California and all these other states that they've disproportionately given blacks more time than whites, even though they didn't have enough evidence to convict them. They were just a person charged with the crime, so they were convicted. And that's the way it is all across America, but that's one thing that we're not addressing. But I think this particular issue, because now you see so many people, when they go out and do a mass murder, they actually commit suicide. And I just think it's so wrong that the parents of these students, the parents of these children, don't go into their room. I go to my son's room all the time to see what in the world they're doing. They're not going to make a bomb in their room. They're not going to sit down and hear and be online and posting all kind of videos in their room, because I would know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They would not. They would not be this person that nobody knows until everything happens that, oh, he posted videos. No, if he posted videos, I either deleted them or saw him when he posted them. So his videos ain't going to be about what you said they're about.
That
need to be doing. Huh?
I'm going to jump in right there. What is so wrong with saying no to your kid? Listen, I think I got more no's than yeses, and I turned out okay. I mean, but it taught me, that everything that I wanted wasn't good for me, and it taught me that it's some things I needed to wait on. I'm sorry, I don't feel sorry for this kid because he died a virgin. Is that the worst thing that can happen to you in life?
But,
no.
But Carrie, I didn't get no's. I got butt whippers, because there's something that I know won't tell you.
Well, see, some of us, and I'll be honest with you, I'm the type of, or I was the type of child that talking to me did just fine. I didn't want you putting your hands on me, so all you had to do was just tell me what you wanted me to do, and I would comply. So, I wasn't one of those type kids that had that hard understanding. All you need to do was be clear and firm in your tone, and I knew what that meant. And so I think sometimes you don't have to be the child of death, but at the same time, they need to know that you're not their friend, that you're their parent. And that I don't care, I know that, there's kids that grew up with everything, and then there's kids that grew up with nothing. And I consider myself to be one of those kids that grew up poor, but we didn't even know we was poor. And so in that still, I think I realized that there were people that had more than me. I always consider there were people that are prettier than me, taller than me. Pick a category. You're going to find somebody that had it better than you. But I think in life, in that part of it, that you learn that you have to use what you got. And so when I look at this kid's story.
It ain't that many people prettier than you. I just want to tell you. It ain't that many people prettier than you. Regardless of what
AJ,
anybody
AJ
else
be a nice shout. Hey, listen, it was my birthday last week, so AJ, be a nice...
No, honest to God, regardless of what anybody say, ain't that many people prettier than you. I just want you to know. So
AJ,
y'all
stop y'all getting off subject.
They don't make it the truth.
Y'all getting off subject. AJ, be nice tonight, y'all. But I realized that as a kid. But what I realized, though, is that God gave us all gifts. And, he did. And so I had to realize that I wasn't athletic, I wasn't, one that was going to be on the gymnastics team. I wasn't one that was going to be a cheerleader, but I had my gift. And I think what I see in this kid, he never stopped to say, what is good about me? Looks like he sat down and thought about everything, but I guess that goes back to his mental illness, but he thought about everything that was wrong with him. and never, ever once said what was right about him. They said that he had the audacity to look down on full Asian men. He looked at them as disgusting because they didn't have any white in them like he did. They even said at one point he dyed his hair blonde. But what happened was the dye job didn't go over well, and nothing turned out blonde but his tips, and his roots were still black. But, you know, it just looks like he was trying so hard to fit in to something that wasn't even real. You're out there in Santa Barbara. That's a bunch of fake people anyway. You know,
well, it's you know, and what's interesting as we're talking about child rearing and being raised and so forth, and I think I was in that class where, because I'm from a family of 10 kids, and my parents pretty much just had an assembly line going on, beat one right after the other. And by the time they got to me, I didn't want none of that. So there was a lot of, I think I got whoopings twice in my upbringing because of that. But in this case, the gentleman, his mother, I mean, according to this, and see, this is where it doesn't really tell all the story about Mr. Rogers' mother, but apparently there's an article that ABC released that said that the mother had on previous, at least two previous occasions prior to the email that he sent to his psychiatrist and that he posted on YouTube saying that he was going to kill people and the manner in which he was going to kill people, when the mother then called the police, but by then he had already left and started on this massacre, rampage, and killing. But this is a signal then that the mother knew there was something wrong prior to. But in this, they're saying that they're trying to link, you know, when the police actually went to the apartment and spoke with him, it's not clear as to if the mother disclosed that he had issues, that he was seeing a psychiatrist, that he had previously posted the videos and so forth. So it's some back and forth conjecture going on that, but it is apparent that the mother knew her son was having some significant issues and that he had posted mentioned stuff. Where so that his mother then had contact with the psychiatrist. But it then, lastly, it was saying that the police didn't feel, other than talking to him, and because there's that discrepancy about what they knew versus what they didn't know, and that they could have done a mandated mental health assessment, which would then they could have taken him into custody and mandated that he had one. So the verdict is out in terms of, I mean, I haven't read enough to know what they did know, but it sounds like they knew to a certain degree about certain videos and things that have been posted, but I don't know if the training didn't dictate or kick in or if they knew enough that they probably, this was one case, had they been equipped with the information, that they probably should have detained him.
Exactly.
But also, a lot of times, a person has two different personalities when you're talking to psychiatrists. They say, I want to do this, and then they come in with this other persona that psychiatrists say, well, they're just acting out for their parents. So a lot of times we might have all the information, but we don't have all the data on that particular person because it's hard to decide which person means what when you're talking to people because I think everybody actually has three personalities.
Well, I'm a Gemini. I'm a bird, too. Let me stop.
Well, Carrie, you got three. Carrie, you got three. I've seen all three of them. Because I remember we had a friend of ours that was co-host on the show, and I was trying to be the mediator between the conversation that was going on, and I just had to put my phone on mute and just stand back because I'm like, Carrie's not going to listen to anything I say because he has kicked over Carrie's bucket of emotions. When he kicked over that bucket, there was nothing that would fit back into that bucket. I'm just saying, I saw it for myself.
That is not right, AJ. That is not how you're supposed to treat the host. You know what? Y'all just forgive AJ. I ain't even going in with y'all. Listen, and you know what? We forgot where we are tonight, y'all. Listen, if you just come center stage, we're talking about hot topics tonight. We've chimed in for over the last hour talking about Mr. Elliot Rogers and his shooting spree that took place out there at UC Santa Barbara. Okay, y'all, we got to move on, though, because we got quite a bit of ground to cover. We want to talk a little bit about this Jewish ceremony, and I'm having trouble pronouncing it, so I'm going to ask Mr. Very Well-Spoken Christopher Bonds or Mr. Very Well-Spoken AJ to pronounce the name of that ceremony, because I'm struggling with how to pronounce this, and I want to get it right, because if I'm going to get in trouble, I might as well be pronouncing it right. Y'all saw the memo that I sent y'all on the Jewish ceremony where, this is what happens in the Jewish ceremony. When a Jewish boy, an infant, is circumcised, let me get this right, Lord help me, he's circumcised, there's a ceremony of sorts where they take the child just like they would at a baptism. Or is that their form of baptism? I don't know. But they take the child to the rabbi, and in an official ceremony, and it's done in New York area, the rabbi then takes, trying to get this politically correct, y'all, he takes his mouth and he places it upon the young boy's penis, and at that point he sucks the blood from around the newly circumcised penis, and that's an official ceremony. Am I struggling, y'all?
Hey, your penis is not the opinion of center stage. I'm just I don't know nothing about you.
But she's telling the truth in terms of that.
I know who owned the media, y'all, so I'm trying to get this right. But this is what do y'all, how do you pronounce the ceremony? Does anybody find it on, where I sent it to you on Facebook? I can't pronounce the ceremony, the actual ceremony, but they do this. And so what has happened recently is that 14 babies have been infected with herpes as a result of this ceremony. And so some people are feeling like Child Protective Services up there needs to intervene, and they feel like, you know, this maybe is more pedophilia than it is an actual ceremony. So all that out of the way, is it right? I mean, is it right that a grown man religion or not, put his mouth upon a child's penis?
Karen, I'm going to tell you from what I know of life.
Uh-oh, here we go.
There's no religious doctrine involved in it. That is an abomination. That is not right. I'm just saying. I don't care what the ceremony is. See, because I think so much of America is built on tradition that we forgot the truth and replaced it with tradition.
And you know what the thing is? You know, when you see that, I see Christopher is saying not to.
I was trying to pronounce the actual ceremony, and it is difficult to pronounce because it's like three syllables, but it's like...
Do your best. What do you come up with?
Metzitzabapa.
Okay. We're going to call it that. That's what it's called. You can Google it. It's in Wikipedia. It's out there. But there's a Jewish ceremony in which they, you know, what does it say? Explain, Christopher, the definition of what they say happened.
Basically, what they do is the at the time of the circumcision being done, actually being executed and done, after which the rabbi basically blesses the child, and then the rite of passage, then they basically actually, the area that was circumcised, they actually put their lips on the baby's penis and sucked the blood coming from the incision just made for the circumcision. And
Chris, have you ever saw True Blood?
Yes.
Oh.
Okay, that's one of my favorite shows. I'm just saying that some traditions are not making sense in this modern era of 2014. I'm just saying.
And I don't think this is happening at all Jewish synagogues, is it?
No. It's and they they abbreviate it and they call it MBP. No, okay. this is not, so as to not be confused, this is something that is primarily practiced by what is called ultra-Orthodox Mohels or Mohels. And it's usually, they're saying it's most prevalent in New York amongst the ultra-Orthodox neighborhoods. So the problem with this practice is that it's an abomination. And it's a violation. And because what it actually does is that now you're talking about possibly transmitting STD to the minor, to a child. Could be herpes, or if that person is HIV, because it's the blood oral barrier, and so whatever that person has that's in their saliva, it could be passed because there's a break or there's a lesion and a cut, and then when you put your mouth on it, it doesn't have to be blood to blood, but it's basically the blood barrier, and that it. Whatever that person, that priest has, can be transmitted. And the issue is becoming, it wasn't as such an issue until two babies died from herpes.
But did you hear the Pope 2 weeks ago? When
he
addressed all the issues of all the priests that were molesting little boys and all this other stuff, you know, he's actually saying that he's going to stop all this and address it, because he, so far it hadn't really been addressed. It's been swept under the rug for all these years. And each priest that did it, they would just sit to another parish.
Sure.
No,
like,
hey, you got to get out of there.
Well, see, like, and in New York, what has happened so much is that these cases of the two babies that have died, but then 14 others have contracted herpes. And the problem is that it on the city of New York books, it was already that type of practice, and because that's a minor, is already in violation of the city's health code. So the Center for Disease and Control, they basically had already deemed that type of practice against the city's and the state and the federal health code. So then they had to change it, and they made the parents do consent. But the city has basically said, whether the parent consents or not, that it's still against the city's health code. So now it's a back-and-forth thing, and now it's being brought to the forefront. But the practice itself is apparently longstanding in the ultra-Orthodox Jewish community. And it's not biblical. This is something that individuals have taken the liberty to try to fly under the guise of a religious belief or doctrine and justify it. And from this saying, they haven't stopped doing this. They're, I think, more cautious, but it's odd because what I'm not finding is that they're talking about a circumcision rite. So this is not even saying there is a medically minded individual even performing the procedures. This sounds like it's the priest or someone within the congregation performing a circumcision that may not be qualified to do it. And then on top of that, someone's putting their mouth on an open lesion after the fact and sucking the blood out.
Did we have an instance in Memphis that we were actually fighting for something not similar, but about a circumcision case?
Christopher Vaughn can tell you a whole lot more about baby.
Okay.
What's his name?
I don't want to go there because I thought I'm saying, Chris, honestly, that was the most prolific I've ever seen you type. I'm a writer, man, and I love the art of sound. I love the art of writing. I'm saying, I was so impressed. I wanted to give you a certificate or something, but anyway, we're going to stay with the conversation. I'm not going there.
What AJ is referring to is Baby Ashton in Memphis had a botched circumcision, and Christopher has been very active in helping the family with that. But you know, circumcision, you know, after baby Ashton kind of did wake me up that that's a very serious issue. So it speaks to if the church is doing these circumcisions and these aren't medical doctors or trained professionals, that's, again, some scary stuff going on. So not just the rabbi putting his mouth on the child's penis, but also the fact that somebody within the congregation may be doing circumcision.
Well, and there's another sub-article attached to this article, and this says that the a Jewish rabbi had just performed another circumcision and placed his mouth on the child's penis. Now, this is really the chief rabbi. His name is Rabbi Avraham Cohn. He told a reporter, this was from the Jewish Daily Forward, that they will continue the practice of MBP circumcision ritual, even without a consent form from the parents. And now the New York Health Department is requiring parental consent. So this rabbi is saying that they're going to be defined. And he said, even if that means that the baby may get herpes.
That's crazy.
So you know they're off.
Yeah. And sometimes as a parent, you got to put religion aside and say, wait a minute, is this right for my child? And go to God for yourself and say, Lord, does this line up with Scripture? And I just don't think that, you know, what I saw, and there's actually visual pictures of it online, that disturbed me greatly. I mean, and I'm just thinking, where are these responsible or, you know,
Terry, I'm saying, Terry, when you look at Facebook, you see so many people that put religion, whether practiced or by tradition, over everything else. So some people was born that way, was taught that way, and cannot. I'm saying it's like as slaves we were taught to go to the back of the bus. So even now we can actually sit at the front. When you go on the bus, all of us are at the back of the bus.
True.
So it's not just tradition. It's inept. It's taught. It's in our strands of DNA. It's these things that we can't get rid of, and we don't know why we do the things that we do, because it was taught that way. It was bred that way. We didn't want some free when they told us we was free, because we didn't know where to go. All we wanted to do was, okay, we can stay on the plantation and we'll work for some land, or work for this little piece of property, or work for these crops. Because they didn't know anywhere to go beyond that. So a lot of people don't know anywhere to go beyond the religion that they were taught. So they're willing to do whatever the religion says because that's what they were taught.
But see, religion has its place. But, I mean, common sense and doing the right thing has its place as well. I think anything that puts your child's life in danger, you know, you as a parent have to then question the tradition and say, if this is not right for my child. And I think if there have been cases of other children coming down with herpes, that's very serious, because what I know about herpes is there for a lifetime, unless there's been some new developments that I haven't heard of. And so I just think even herpes or HIV or any sexually transmitted disease is not something that you want your child to encounter. So when I heard this story, I just thought, you know, God, here we go again with another, group of parents who are poor parents. I mean, I have to just call them poor parents, because your responsibility is to take care of that infant until they reach an age in which they can make decisions for themselves. And I just think that decision to allow that rabbis to do that to your child is some type of way of just... you know, it's too sexual to me. I mean, to me, it's of a sexual nature. It may not be,
when you lend somebody else your ability of discernment and you ask them, because see, a lot of people, when you go to confessional, see, a lot of people will take everything to confessional because that's what they believe in, that's what they were taught. And a lot of people will take whatever said as law, regardless of the law of the land that you're in, because you are actually visiting a strange land. So when preachers take these concepts from the Bible, from different scriptures, and make them be what they want it to be and teach you what they want you to know, a lot of times people can't see beyond what they were taught.
I believe that. I'll believe that. And you know, and that happens to a lot of us. I think I had an old auntie that used to say, you can't be better than where you came from. And I thought, well, I beg to differ with you. But I think a lot, I think from the old school thinking that she had, she was saying, you know, it's impossible to be better than, you know, your stock. But I think you can be whatever you want to be. So a man thinketh again, so is he. And so I think, I don't know. I don't know how I got. Where was I going with that? Y'all, I'm sorry. I'm multitasking.
The ceremony itself.
It's all right.
I think I found the translation. It's actually called Hatafat Dam Brit. Hatafat is how it's pronounced. And this ultra orthodox Jews are so religiously radical in doing this. They also made a secondary statement and said that before this became to the real, I think, media forefront, they were performing these religious circumcisions without the parents' permission. So now how they got the child and they did, and they actually performed the circumcision. And then immediately is when the rabbi sucks the blood from the circumcision. So these.
And I'm glad you cleared that up, because I was thinking, well, where's the blood coming from? But now that makes perfectly sense. So this is done immediately, because the one of the pictures online, you see a child just screaming. I mean, the picture just looks like a child just screaming. That would make perfectly good sense. The wound is open. And the child is screaming because when the rabbi does what he does, it probably hurts.
Well,
I had a friend in junior year, you know, told us, you know, he was one of my best friends. He said, man, I'm going to get circumcised tomorrow. But he played basketball. So for about 2 weeks, you should have saw him walk.
Oh, my God.
He walked like every step hurt, and I could just imagine that this is not something you want to do when you're in the 11th grade. I'm just saying that is.
I believe that. And so can you imagine being a child and having a wound open and some grown person does, you know, and I have to be careful because I'm trying to be politically correct. But, I mean, you know, it's their religious belief, you know, but it appears it doesn't happen across the board with every rabbi. So that shows you it may be a tradition that some of the more modern rabbis are realizing shouldn't exist anymore, which I kind of agree with that. If it's not being done across the board, then maybe the more modern rabbis are realizing that maybe this isn't so good for today.
Well, see, I agree, but it's kind of like, you know, I had a friend that, you know, they invited me to their church. So I went to the church, and there was this, I'm trying to think of the prophet's name. He had a patch over his eye, which I really didn't think he needed a patch, but it worked for him the way he was talking. But anyway, what happened, the pastor's wife was in a wheelchair, and he was going to make her walk. So he's going through this process. He said, because the people in here don't believe I can't make you walk. Otherwise, you'd be walking. So to me, a lot of times, the stringent belief you have in whatever it is, you can blame it on whatever you want it to be to make it be that you are correct. Just to say, with this particular instance, with this particular procedure, they believe wholeheartedly in what they say they believe in, which doesn't mean that it's right. It just means that that's what they believe in. So regardless of rule, law, or country, they're going to do what they say they've done all these centuries and all these years.
I can go there.
Well, true, but they have this particular, the Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox, they utilize Genesis 17:10-14 that speaks about the outward sign, a man participating, this Israel's covenant, and so forth. But if you read that, it's talking about traditional circumcision, but not the other piece of it. There is nothing in Scripture that they can provide says that then the priest is supposed to then suck the blood from the foreskin and do that. And then furthermore, the New Testament dispels with necessity or the religious practice of
circumcision. So they're kind of, you're right, they're holding on to what they believe is the truth, but they're not even practicing what they're supposed to be taking from Scripture as what's correct. Because the Scripture doesn't say, do put your mouth on the baby's penis.
I agree. You know, I think regardless of what your religious belief is, sometimes in all churches, you'll know some of it lines up with Scripture, and then, you know, your preacher, your rabbi, or your priest will say something, you go, no, that ain't in the Bible. And I think we all have to have that little radar that picks up, that ain't in the Bible. And so you don't just blindly, like sheep, follow just because the preacher said it or the rabbi said it or the priest said it. If it doesn't line up with Scripture, it goes out the window to me. I don't care who says it.
But,
I mean, that's just how I...
Something interesting. I have friends that are, I don't necessarily know if they're ultra, but I know they're Orthodox Jewish. They don't tend to read their Bible.
Really?
They don't. They really don't. And because they're under the guise of, and I'm not trying to throw stones, under Judaism, most individuals that believe in that don't read the traditional, whether it's the King James or NIV and so forth. So it's kind of like Catholicism, where they believe in some tenets or facets of Scripture, but a lot of what they believe is not Scripture. I mean, they, even Orthodox Jewish, most of their priests believe a little bit of the spinoff of the Roman Catholic Church, which if you're a priest, you can't be married. Well, that's okay if you choose to elect that, but it's not Scripture. But the Scripture doesn't say you can't be a priest or a man or a nun or a woman of God, but you can't be married. Now, if you want that by choice, there's no problem with that. But when we start talking about most individuals who are supposed to be steeped in some religious belief, whether they're Roman Catholic and they do the catechism and Catholicism, or if you're Muslim and you do the Quran, or you're a Christian and you're supposed to be doing the Bible, most people don't utilize their own basis for their religious belief, and they don't know enough because they don't even read to interpret their own. They usually allow somebody else to paint that broad picture, and they believe it by faith, and they don't read for themselves.
Isn't that why the Scripture says, study to show yourself approved? So that you won't move?
Yes, it is.
You know, yeah. And I think that's what people forget. Regardless of what the preacher says, the evangelist says, the prophet says, the priest, the rabbi, you got to go to God for yourself when you lack understanding on anything. That's just the best way to get the answer that you need, is to go to God yourself. We're only gonna hit one more subject, y'all, because we went so long on Elliot Rogers. I just had so much to say on that. Sorry, I'm gonna move on. Listen. You know, I'm seeing one thing in the news, and it's just popping up, just kind of sporadically. But where is the missing plane? Where is the missing plane? I mean, are we really going to say that a plane just dropped out of the sky, and we're really not going to give anybody any explanation as to where it's at? I don't know why the country is not outraged. I don't know why the world is not outraged and demanding some answers. I mean, we're leaving it to the families and the friends of those people that were on the plane to make that fight. But if the truth be known, all of us that fly, all of us that have family and friends that fly, should be outraged and demand some answers. I mean, can y'all see where I'm going with that? I mean, nobody even really talks about Malaysia Airlines flight MH370 anymore. It kind of sporadically pops up in the news. But in reality, something's wrong when a plane can disappear out of the sky when it's being followed by, what do you call those people, the air traffic controllers. They don't just lose your plane. You know, I happen to have a girlfriend who in college was studying to be an air traffic controller. Best friend is an air traffic controller. She dated a guy that was an air traffic controller. She knows an awful lot about this subject. And in reality, planes don't just drop off the radar. So what do y'all think happened? I mean, why are we not getting any answers this much later? I mean, we still don't know anything.
I think a lot that because of what happened, and that it is really known what happened by senior individuals, by top security level at all levels, that for whatever reason that it was designed that way, they also knew that it would probably only be a matter of time before it would become secondhand news. And it's a shame to say, but people's attention span is short because they get caught up on something else. And when you think about it, most of the families, quote-unquote, that were supposed to be affected are not from America.
So hey, a lot of times... Go ahead.
Go ahead. I didn't just cut you off.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just simply saying that, I mean, it's been hard to figure out, but the one thing I do know that any other major mystery that has occurred, some people stay hot on the topic and they continue to research and analyze and so forth, but by and large, we get caught up on the next door and we go our way about that. And it may have more precedence or more concern with people, I guess, if it has some legitimacy to it, if it was Americans or a lot of American families and so forth. But because it's not, it's there, it's on the, quote-unquote, no pun intended, it's on the radar, but then it's gone. People, it just, life goes on, and people don't have the wherewithal, the concentration to keep up on a story like that or keep the heat on the leadership to ensure that we get some answers.
And see, you know what, and I hear that, and it really shouldn't be that way. I mean, and that's the scary part. We're going to go to the phone lines and take a phone call. Your phone line is, or phone number is blocked, so I'm going to go to a Skype call. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Good evening. Hi.
I'm not on Skype, so...
Hey, it just shows up as a 111 number, so we just assume sometime it's on Skype.
Oh, okay, so you guys do hear me. Hello.
Yes.
I'm Teresa. I live in Texas. And
yes,
to add to the conversation of the missing plane,
mm-hmm,
I listened to Brother Dick Gregory on YouTube, and he gives a darn good explanation as to what happened. And I just will refer you to that so you can make your own decisions about it. And but I think you'll get some enlightening.
Doesn't Dick Gregory say that the plane went to Diego Garcia? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, that's what I'm referring to. But the key part for me was that he said that there were a number of scientists aboard that plane.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes into explanation of who these scientists were and why it would be necessary to get rid of this.
Okay, I think A.J. Houston gave us an explanation similar to that one on one of the shows that where we covered it. I think, A.J., wasn't it that you said that there were some very important engineers or scientists who had a certain patent that had not been
they were different companies. They weren't the only one. It was a group of people. So a lot of times everything is really about either finance or structure or owning something. So with them being alleviated, just like the plane that disappeared with Ron Brown on it that didn't have a black box, you know, that was the first time in the history of anything that an American dignitary was on a plane that didn't have a black box to resonate where that plane came from or what happened. So a lot of times we look at things as conspiracy theories because President Bush is the one that started adding theories to conspiracies so it would throw us off.
I'm saying
go back and look during 9/11. Everything he said was all these conspiracy theories out. And he kept saying it so much that, you know, a lot of times when you say something over and over again, it sticks in the public mind as though you are an official that is telling us exactly what it is. So at some point in time, we have to regulate ourselves and understand that sometimes subliminally what we're told is not what is. So just like the Pentagon, when the plane crashed in the Pentagon, there were no tail sections, there were no engines, there was no remnants of any plane in the forefront when the cameras were there. But we still think it was a plane.
And I think two things. First of all, as far as that plane is concerned, if you go back and look at any images or any images or stories where there was a picture of the incident, you'll only see one image, and that's one shot from one angle of the plane hitting the building. That, when someone said that, that absolutely blew me away because I never paid attention. On every newspaper, whether that was the Chicago Tribune or the New York Post or anybody who was covering the story, I mean, it could have been Dallas Morning News or the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, they all had the same shot. And somebody said, does anybody notice that the photographer's name was never quoted?
If you look at the plane, there's a shadow underneath the right side of the plane that resembles, and you know, all the people that saw it said there was no emblem of any particular airlines on the tail section on the plane can be seen. But there was a little shadow underneath the plane, which is remnants of American satellite-type planes. So it's a military-type plane that flew into the building. So regardless of what anybody thinks, I'm saying until I'm shown anything different, the evidence is the evidence.
I'd like to add something kind of funny to this conversation. Remember, there's this magician in Las Vegas, and he makes a white tiger or something disappear. So think about some of these situations on that level. There are still people that are living that thinks the whole moon landing was a Hollywood production. And if you look at, say, Avatar, I mean, it's just absolutely unbelievable what they can do with smoke and mirrors. So you guys have a great night, and thanks for taking my call. I really enjoy the show.
Thank you. You know, she's got a great point. And most of what we see today, y'all, and it's so sad, is it's all production. Everything is staged. Everything basically has actors or, you know, what do they call those people? Crisis actors, or we see all these terms that before we hadn't really paid any attention to. But a lot of the things that we're seeing today, it kind of reminds you of Hollywood. I mean, nothing seems real. I mean, the world that we're living in today. You know, I was having a conversation with a friend the other day, and I said everything that normally would be considered immoral is now accepted. And things that would typically be accepted are now considered, you know, like, I mean, let's just say you're just an upstanding Christian and you believe in the Bible, and so therefore you believe, let's just say, homosexuality is wrong. If you say that publicly today, you are basically, if you got a business, they're going to run you out of business. And it just seems like an incredible agenda of that all over the media. You know, back in the day, and I'm just giving you examples, abortion was considered something, a very personal choice, you know, on the part of the woman, and nobody was in your face saying an abortion is a good thing. You need to go and have one if you're not ready to have a child. But we see that today. And I could go on and on with these examples. And so our world does kind of seem different. It seems like some creepy, scary Hollywood production of some, you know, out-of-body experience that we're having, where it's like a nightmare, if the truth be known, where what we think what we used to think was right is now being considered wrong, and what we know is wrong is now being considered right. Would y'all agree with that, or is it just me?
But no, I do agree that there's this thing in this American society that's gradually taking away our First Amendment rights, and what they did at first was to make it wrong for you to voice your opinion, and you didn't really notice it until when you voiced your opinion about something that mattered, it didn't matter. See, there's these gradual things that affect our perception of the American culture that we don't know until it's actually taken from us.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Christopher Bonds, you want to weigh in on that?
And, you know, too, and I agree with that, too, and I think that it's like AJ is saying, until it matters, it's okay. But once it matters, then it's off limits because me having a constitutional right to say homosexuality, if I choose to believe that it's wrong, if I choose to believe that theft is wrong, if I choose to believe that lying is wrong, well, if it gets to the point where someone perceives that theft is okay or that I shouldn't say anything because if I say that, then I'm a hater of thieves. Well, no, there's laws on the books. There's still laws on the books about homosexuality. So there was a time where you would be criminally charged if it was proven that you were caught in an act of same-sex cohabitation and so on and so on. And I think what has happened is that AJ is right. Because the money, because there's a lot of influence, and a lot of our leadership are living in those type of lifestyles, whether they're homosexual, bisexual, so forth, now it's a hot topic. So now they want to be able to protect that population from anybody being able to say anything. And when it comes to something else, then they'll jump on that bandwagon and then they'll be against you or saying that you're promoting hate or hate speech when you're against something else.
And I agree totally. And I think, you know, we really got to be careful that we understand what we believe is what we believe and we're not tagging on what somebody else believes. I mean, politically correct is a term that just really hit the forefront. But before then, people said what they thought. Today, you got to be careful that you're not stepping on somebody's toes because if you do step on their toes and you're no longer on the radio or you no longer have a business or, you know, some other kind of situation occurs where, you know, people come down on you really hard and let you know that they didn't appreciate what you said. Something's wrong with that. I mean, and we really got to start paying attention. Basically for ourselves, we can't not expect that leadership is going to take care of all of our needs. We as individuals have got to realize that we have got to decide what's best for us and our families. And I think that is something that we have lost focus on because, again, and I love our president. I think Barack Obama, you know, is making some strides that, you know, we thought may never happen in our lifetime, but we're seeing it. But at the same time, I do not wake up every morning thinking Barack Obama's going to save all, you know, solve all my problems or save, you know, me from whatever's going to happen. I think I take that responsibility upon myself. And I think each and every individual has got to do the same. You got to wake up every morning making every decision for yourself, not letting the media, not letting your mom or nobody else make that decision. If you're over 21, you need to be making those decisions for yourself in terms of, you know, Governor Cuomo. He's the governor in the state of New York. Governor Cuomo had the audacity. I think he thinks he owns the state because he's the governor of the state. But they said that Cuomo said, if you got a gun, you need to leave his state. Well, that's just crazy. I mean, you ain't going to be the governor forever, you know, but that's the mentality today. You know, that's crazy. But I think people got to realize that we got to start making decisions and realize that there's a lot of agendas again, and you got to be very cognizant of that and wake up every day with the mind of taking care of today for yourself and not letting anything or anybody else do it for you. But y'all agree with that?
Yes, because our leadership's agenda is not necessarily the people's agenda. And Governor Cuomo and other leaders have, I think, taken things more personally, and they're no longer public servants.
Yes.
So I think you're right. We better start waking up and doing the things that we think are in our best interest because a lot of our leadership is not.
And I'm going to piggyback off something Infowars.com said recently. Alex Jones was over on his show recently, and I typically don't plug anybody else's show. But what he said was a valid point, that until we get up and do something, whether that be, you know, share information with your friends about what you know is going on in the world. Maybe your friends aren't as awake as you are. Whether that's do your own show or put out, you know, your own blog or a newsletter or something. You got to take some responsibility for what's going on because unless we share information with each other about what we see and going on in the world, there's a whole lot of people that are still sheep. And you got to realize that if we're not careful, everybody, the few that's awake cannot fight for everybody. Everybody's got to stand up on their own hind legs and do something, or we're going to be absolutely under martial law, and it ain't going to be pretty. I mean, we're already – would y'all consider us already at the point of being a police state? Or what do they call it? Is that what they call it, y'all? I am so tired. It's called a police state, isn't it?
Yeah, and yes, to a certain degree, I think that we are, because anytime the police can have prosecutorial immunity, that's police state, because they're not intending on even the misconduct or clearly proven to have done wrong that they're really going to do anything. And really only if it's elevated or it happens to a certain family or individual with a certain last name, not too much is going to happen to that police officer. And I'm not advocating a witch hunt, but, yeah, we're in a police state because police can essentially do anything. And in a court of law, they're going to be believed over anyone else, even when the evidence shows that the police officer didn't do right.
I agree. And listen, y'all, I typically don't do commercials, but I'm going to do an anti-commercial for a dealership here in in Dallas-Fort Worth that I had a very negative experience with this week. I'm going to say, without a doubt, personal knowledge, hands-on, don't ever do business with Clay Cooley Nissan. Don't do business with Clay Cooley, period. I'm talking about if I told you the story, your mouth would drop open. You wouldn't even believe that they do business like that. And I'm going to leave it there until we do the actual show and bring the person on, and we're going to talk about exactly what they had happened to them this week. But I was absolutely flabbergasted at the car business today and how, I mean, we're talking about snakes and I mean, woo. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, and they don't, I mean, these are wolves. And when you walk into a dealership today, and I'm going to do a show on it, in fact, and I know just the young man that I'm going to bring on, because after seeing this firsthand this week, I realized that most people don't know how to buy a car. And I think what's going to happen is somebody like me is going to have to put on a show to show you exactly how to go into a dealership and negotiate your deal. Because I think what happens is, this is what I understand the whole process is. They bring you in, and they go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth until they wear you down. And then at the point that they wear you down and you are so ready to get out of there, that's when they stick the paperwork in your face and say, hey, and sign here. And I think that's poor business practices. And I think it happens across the country. But you know what? I think people have got to start going in knowing, where do you find out what the price of the car is for what you want to pay? And when you walk in, you absolutely got to know what you want to pay for the car, what kind of car you're looking for, what terms you want, how much you want to pay for it monthly. And if they can't offer you that, you got to be prepared to walk out the door. So I'm going to bring a young man on in the coming weeks, just going to sit down, and we're going to go play by play with this thing, and I'm going to make sure that everybody that's in my listening audience from now on knows how to go in and buy a car. So I'm going to leave it right there, y'all, but that was one of the most, I just can't even explain in words how terrible the transaction was. But that's for an upcoming show. Okay, listen, we got to get out of here, but thank you so much for tuning in tonight. AJ, Christopher, listen, I love you guys. I don't know if I ever tell y'all, but I love you guys so much for coming every week, showing up, you know, doing what you do. I just tonight had to say that to you all. I love you so much.
Why,
I think,
why y'all say that when the show's over? You'll never say that when the show's starting.
You know what?
Now, AJ.
He said, hello, AJ. Wednesday. Come on. Wednesday. Tune in every week, Friday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. Okay, guys, we got to get out of here. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.